Okay. On to item 16, presentation of alternative investment fees and expense report.
So again, I've asked Richie to join me if there's any specific questions, but just as a reminder, this is the second time the board has seen this report. This is our annual required disclosure of an alternative investment management fees mandated under California law. This is the first year where any new commitment we made this year, or sorry, in calendar year 2017, was required to provide this information. Historically, if we've asked for the information, and GPs have been willing to provide it, but they're not required to do so. So then you can take a look at these reports across all the different categories of the performance information, the partnership expenses, offsets, everything like that. We've been able to get very good compliance on a voluntary basis for most of our legacy managers, but you'll also see a couple of new funds in there that are required to do so for calendar year 2017. So I think I mentioned last year, this is something that in isolation, calendar year by calendar year, is probably not the most helpful piece of information. But as we start to put a couple of these years together and look at trend line analysis, it'll become a more useful document. And particularly when we start to couple it with performance information, it'll become a more useful document. But this is the regulatory requirement at this point, that we do this once per year and we put it on our website. So that's the background. If there's specific questions on line items, I've asked Rishi to show me your address.
Are we paying too much?
Sometimes we're happy to pay a lot if it's a shared fee.
Yes.
So, if we're paying out $100 million in carried interest, I'm actually relatively happy about that because we've probably received $400 to $500 million in profits then.
So this is the chasing alpha graph, right? This is the what it costs to chase?
Yeah, so internally, I'm not somebody who is adverse to paying fees. I'm adverse to paying fees for not getting anything in return for my money. So we always vet things in terms of what's the expected unit of return per unit of fee, and that's how we judge things across asset classes.
And I'm assuming, based on the prior discussion with Raleigh, that this is the sort of the starting point for an analysis if you in terms of reviewing fees, that if we were going to try to peek behind the curtain to make sure that what was passed through to us was appropriate, this is the starting point, is that?
Yeah, so just to kind of frame this, if you take a look at just page 3 of the memo there, columns E and F, these are pretty mechanical. Management fees and carried interest paid. These are relatively mechanical, and it's just a spreadsheet analysis to say, is this what we agreed to?
Okay.
Columns G, partnership expenses, and column H, offset, and I, other. This is where it can get a little squirrely, and this is where Raleigh will have a lot of fun.
Okay.
Some of this is the nature of the private equity asset class is such that, we've talked about this with the board many times. We can make progress on a number of fronts. Sometimes it's not the overall level of management fees or the break for carried interest. Sometimes it's on the ability to pass through partnership expenses, and that's not necessarily something that's visible to the trustees when we're approving an investment. Sometimes it's moving, and Rusty and I have talked about this, kind of that net migration from paying on committed capital to paying on invested capital. There's a lot of these fronts that we push on here. And as we start to put 3 or 4 years of these annual reports together, we'll be able to kind of talk about some of the impact of that. But remember, these are usually 10-year life investments going in, and they always end up being 12 to 14-year investments with extensions. So an individual calendar year is helpful information, but we need to take a look at that fee impact over the life cycle of a fund. This doesn't really capture that, but we'll start to build towards that.
I remember Tim?
Okay, you can go for it.
And say what on column I, we've got EIF, USPF 3 and 4 have very large numbers relative to anyone else in column I. I guess I'm asking for a little bit of background on what would cause those amounts, other expenses, to be so much greater.
I don't recall offhand, but We can look into it.
Is this the rule that they were saying may deter private equity from doing business in California? And if so, has that come about?
You want to frame how you've approached that discussion with potential GPs?
Sure. So some GPs have a lot of experience with California public pension plans, and it's not an issue. Other GPs have shied away from including California public pension plans in their prior funds. And so with those GPs, we need to understand what their concerns are with working with California public pension plans and see if there's a way for us to come together and address their concerns while still ensuring that we're meeting our fiduciary duties and responsibilities. So far, that we've had success in doing that once we've had an open conversation. In my opinion, a lot of it is a lack of understanding of what our requirements are as a public pension plan. And so that lack of understanding has sometimes led to fear on the part of the public, on the part of the general partners. But once we share information and concerns, we've been able to get over that.
Do they address this stuff, like example, maybe an II conference or anything like that? I don't know what the right forum would be.
Well, II is pretty broad, but there are a number of California-specific forums where the CIOs share notes. I think I've heard of three funds who will not partner with California funds at this point. The vast majority will, as Richie said, once they understand the scope of the law. And I think a lot of this is how we present ourselves to the general partner community. And Richie's done a great job of when we were introducing ourselves to a new GP. Here's the CSERA requirements. Here's California law. Here's actually clarity around what you're going to have to disclose. It's already baked into law. It's a go, no-go from the get-go. So, I mean, they can look at that and say whether they'll partner with us or not. That way, if somebody's not going to partner with us, we want to just save everybody's time and energy. And I think, you know, we a year into this or a year and a half into this process, most general partners know which side of the line they're on now, and they'll either, you know, state up front that we won't work with California or we're okay with it. And it's typically in the venture capital space where there's been a huge surplus of fundraising. The venture capitalists still have a lot of negotiating power and can choose who their investors are. And, you know, in some of those instances, they don't need the hassle. They can get the money elsewhere. In most cases, folks are okay with it.
I'll just piggyback off of that. You heard from Stepstone, and we're focusing on small, middle, and large buyout funds in the U.S. And a lot of those fund managers have California public pension plans in their LP bases, in their current LP bases, or from prior funds. And so it hasn't been a problem so far.
Okay,
good. Well, actually, we've identified one fund, a potential new relationship that hadn't previously had California clients, but now with the clarity of the law has decided that they'll allow California clients in, California public fund clients.
Right.
Just adding quickly to my earlier question, it strikes me that carried interest could have been classified as other expense in these categories.
It is possible. There was actually a $3 million number in that column for one of the funds, and that number really jumped out at me, and it was for that particular fund where they had classified something incorrectly as partnership expenses.
So. Yeah, that's an important clarification. These are manager-reported figures.
Sure.
So, especially the historical ones, we can't contractually obligate them to provide this. It's kind of, you know, we get a form as what they provided to us, but we will go back and ask the question on the EIF because that does jump out.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Thank you.